5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Model Moon!
The dark side of the Hoddle Moon. Immutably amazing crypto wisdom. This is the August 2019 crypto currently. On this episode, we talk about Wells Fargo laundering money, Trump's embargo of Venezuela and their failed crypto, North Korea stealing crypto to fund their weapons program, some exciting VCH updates, and a whole lot more. You are now orbiting the dark side of the Hoddle Moon.
Copy. This show is proudly sponsored by Salamantech's point-of-sale devices and software. Tired of all the headaches dealing with cryptocurrency? You don't know what a private key is? You don't want to deal with exchanges? Well, if you're a business and you just want to run your business without thinking about cryptocurrency headaches, look no further than Salamantechs. We provide point-of-sale software that allows you to get paid in fiat currency, that's euros, allowing your customers to pay in cryptocurrency, that's BTC, ETH, and a host of others.
Stand by.
Dark Side of the Hoddle Moon proudly uses the audio services of Eye the Sound. Beyond the amazing sound production, they've really been a sounding board, pun intended, for our show, giving us great customer support and constructive criticism and feedback. So if you want a little bit more personalized attention you're not going to get from a bigger provider, check out iThesound.com.
Hoddle Moon!
All right, it's our Crypto Currently show, and I'm Blockade. We're here with Josh, and today we've got a bunch of interesting articles. The first one I wanted to talk to you about, Josh, was Wells Fargo employee nabbed laundering $14 million worth of money. And they always talk about Bitcoin being used as a tool of criminals, but in actuality, banks and fiat currency tend to be the majority of when it comes to illicit activity. Do you have any comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, $14 million is like child's play for these people anyway. And there's billions and billions and billions, as Mr. President Donald Trump likes to say, of money in these banks. And a good percentage of that money is being, you know, washed clean, or, you know, used for bad purposes. And it really completely nullifies the argument that people like to use against Bitcoin, which is it's used by criminals, drug traffickers, thieves, pimps, and all of society's worst people. Actually, that's not true. And I've said it before, I'll say it again, I'll say it again in the future too. And that's Bitcoin is a public ledger. So it's the worst type of currency to use if you want to commit any criminal activity.
Exactly.
So Bitcoin is definitely not used for illicit activity or anything illegal unless the people are idiots. So they deserve to get caught if they're using Bitcoin for anything illegal, because it's a public ledger. Every transaction is recorded.
Yeah,
and like, broadcast across the network. So
yeah, and like you said, ridiculous. $14 million is kind of small potatoes for these guys. But yeah, it was just a local branch manager, and yeah, he just forged some documents, and it's pretty easy to launder money if you've got someone on the bank on the inside. So yeah, let's go on to the next one.
Well, yeah, that's true. But also, you got to think, money in many cases is not in the bank vault, and it's just created through signatures of people signing mortgages, which is like a death warrant, basically. The word mortgage comes from like a death contract. And basically, your signature on the piece of paper creates the money for the bank to loan to yourself, which you then have to pay back the bank at interest. It's kind of like an amazing system, the way that that works. So it's magical fairy dust stuff, the current stuff that we use as our money in comparison to cryptocurrency.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's hit another article because we got a lot of news today. The next one I wanted to talk about, this is from beincrypto.com. Trump administration places fresh sanctions on Venezuela while freezing assets. Sorry, I've been drinking a little bit myself today. And it was pretty funny because they're basically freezing assets starting this month in August. But I don't think, although it's going to hurt Venezuela, They're kind of using this as a propaganda bonanza because they're saying, oh, because of the sanctions, this and that. I think the Maduro regime was doing plenty to destroy their currency without anything the U.S. would do with their redenominations, lobbying, you know, cutting zeros off their currency. Do you have any take on that?
Well, you know, governments always make poor decisions when it comes to financial stuff, especially when it's socialist governments. And when you've got a limited amount of people making decisions for an entire economy, you're bound to have this kind of pie in the sky, lunatic fringe type of thinking. And if I were Donald Trump, I would just let Venezuela be for right now. They seem to be doing a really good job of you know, messing their own country up really well. They don't need him being the bogeyman or giving the president any type of, I don't know, ammunition or anything like that.
Yeah.
What do you think, Cade?
Yeah, well, I think, too, it's like, you know, some people, you know, want there to be some sort of U.S. military intervention. Even I know a lot of Venezuelan expats want the U.S. to go in and take them down. But again, that would just serve to people. Oh, it would work, but because of foreign intervention, it won't work. But I thought there was this really good quote I want to get your reaction to. Maduro said, in 2019, we have a schedule for oil to be sold in petros and in this way continue to free us from a currency that is used by the Washington elite. So it's already August. Do you think Venezuela will be selling oil for petros before 2020?
No, I don't think they will. I don't think there'll be any international buyers. This is not to say that Venezuelan people, there's anything wrong with them. Let's make that clear as well. The people of Venezuela, unfortunately, were captivated by idealistic, you know, views on making some kind of nationalized, harmonized, socialized, communist paradise. And the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And Venezuela is a great example of such a hell destination that you arrive at when you carry out, you go full socialism. And it's a real shame. You just can look at Venezuela, you can look at Cuba in the past, you can look at Cambodia when they went full communist and Pol Pot and his crazy wife with all of her shoes. And she almost had as many pairs of shoes as he had collected skulls at the end of that regime. So I just want to be clear and say that it's not the people of Venezuela that I'm attacking here. In fact, there was a great interview that I did with a Venezuelan guy who lives in London. And let me try and dig up that interview. It was about, it must have been at the end of last year. And he was adamantly against the regime in Venezuela, but super pro blockchain and super pro cryptocurrency. He would be a great guest to get on this show in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I definitely have sympathy for the people in Venezuela too, but you know what they say, you vote for communism, you get communism. You vote for socialism, you get socialism. And sadly, there is not enough votes against these ideologies, apparently.
Well, that's the thing. Once you've got enough people that are, you know, they're completely dependent on a system that's been set up, even if it doesn't serve them perfectly well. They think that it's their only option. And in many cases, they do keep on voting for it. It's not like Iraq, where you basically had elections and Saddam Hussein would always get 99% approval rating every time. They still actually have free and fair elections in Venezuela, according to many, you know, electoral watch places. However, when you've got a population that don't really have good access to information, and the ones that do have good access to information are all flocking to cryptocurrency and Bitcoin, it's kind of sad because you've got a lot of poor people in the country and they're kind of taken for granted by the socialists, the champagne drinkers, the limousine riders, the helicopter flyers, you know, the helicopter. You know, I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's hop on to it.
When you're young, you think socialism is a great idea. because all of your problems are someone else's, it's because of somebody else. But when you get older, you realize, actually, a lot of the problems are all to do with myself, you know? Yeah. I've created my own life through my own decisions. And then once that paradigm shift happens, you can never be a socialist ever again.
Yeah, well, let's hop to that's a good point to take off from. Let's hop to a different country. So this is pretty interesting. Obviously, a lot of people think crypto is going to hurt fiat and hurt certain countries. And even some of these other crazy countries like North Korea, I saw this, that apparently they were able to, at least in 35 reported instances, target financial institutions and exchanges and mining companies. And they were able to steal $2 billion worth of crypto to fund their WMD program. So I think that's kind of interesting. Maybe this would be a feather in the cap of, oh, crypto will be used for bad things.
Well, unfortunately, Mr. Kim Jong-un is a dictator in South Korea. He's probably got lots of terrible advice from people that are older than him. And he kind of just has to kind of nod and agree and go along with it, even though he's the supreme leader, because that's the way the society is structured. Like, old people have to be listened to, irrespective of what nonsense that they're spouting. So I wouldn't be surprised if some of the hawks in North Korea are like, right, just do a missile test. Just do one. It's like, and they'll be like, why? And I say, it's because it's like Tuesday. We haven't done one for a while, you know. Because I heard last week that they'd shot another missile into the ocean. Like, well done, you can shoot missiles into the ocean. I don't really see the point of that. But I swear he's just getting bad advice at this point, because when he meets Trump, you can see that actually he's personally trying to make an effort to get along with him. He would love to be the guy that could bring North Korea out of the socialist misery that they've put themselves in. If he could somehow bring a market economy into North Korean society, that would be brilliant. Now, the South Koreans do not want, by and large, there to be like a reunification of the country for economic reasons. So socially, culturally, there are lots of links, of course, but economically, like, there's such a massive, you know, distance between the average South Korean person and their worldview and a North Korean person who unfortunately doesn't know very much about the rest of the world. So there's quite a lot of trepidation in the South about reunification. There's lots of sympathy for the people of the North, of course, but they don't want there to be just like a complete open border where people from the North come to the South immediately. It's going to create a lot of social disruption. So I think the best solution would be some kind of managed peace, which allows some of the best businesses in South Korea to go and help rebuild the North, get the construction going, get the infrastructure there. Slowly but surely build it so that it has, at least in terms of infrastructure, some kind of a parity, and then start introducing different levels of integration from then on. It's like a very slow thing. But the North Koreans, using stolen crypto funds for WMD, how much of this is verifiable? Not too sure. It's a good talking point. The North Koreans, in my view, are using technology that is super old. Look at the way that their military dress, they're still using the same uniforms as they were using in like 70s and 80s. The country's on its knees, basically. Mm-hmm. Their technology that they use for like even doing state broadcasts, it's still like not even HD TV that they pulled off. So the idea that they're ever going to be a threat is just a joke, and we need to just treat them with sympathy in many respects.
Yeah, crypto can save a lot of people and save a lot of countries, but I don't think crypto can save North Korea. Let me hit you with the three more topics real quick. We'll just hit them rapid fire, and then we'll move on to some other stories. So other things I saw this week was that the Bitcoin hash rate reached a record level of 71.43 quintillion hashes per second, which is pretty crazy. For our U.S. listeners, it looks like Coinbase is possibly adding 8 new currencies to the roster, including like Dash and Decred, which I think are pretty good projects. And MasterCard is searching for a cryptocurrency and blockchain expert. So it looks like they want to make their own cryptocurrency wallet. So maybe that's the most interesting one. Do you have any take on that? MasterCard wanting to get into cryptocurrency? You think it's just going to be, basically MasterCard, but on the blockchain?
I think it'd be more like MasterCard with some people that understand blockchain technology, and they're going to leverage it in a private network and leverage the brand name of blockchain, inverted quotes. I did look at some of those jobs. I feel like those jobs are going to be ripe for the taking in a couple of years for people like us that actually do know the industry well, if the industry keeps on developing at this pace, because we'll be considered OGs at that time. Unfortunately,
we're already OGs.
Well, yeah, basically. Unfortunately, it didn't apply for the job. I think they're based in the United States. But those types of jobs, I'm coming for them in the next 5 years, that's for sure. So I'm interested in that. I think it's cool. Lots of companies are opening up at least research divisions for blockchain and use cases within their own companies. It's going to change finance. But I think the understanding gap is still missing for a lot of these companies. And they don't really want to have a permissionless system. They want a permissioned system, which is fine. Because permissioned systems enable like security of data plus super fast transactions. So that's good. But it's not, completely libertarian, ANCAP, free market. Yeah. It's more like, we want to be a company. We want to be in the blockchain space. We want to be innovators in fintech, that type of model, which is completely fine as long as you're open about that and you're transparent about that from the start.
Yeah, it might be a private or semi-private blockchain with permissions. And yeah, I don't know exactly how MasterCard secures their network right now, but you think they'd probably, with the blockchain, it would be even more secure. And yeah, I kind of want to get into product management myself, but I think, at least me personally as a crypto OG, working at MasterCard versus working at some of these other exciting projects isn't quite as appealing to me.
Yeah, I see what you mean. But then there are certain perks that come with working with a massive mega corporation. And that is like the ability to do awesome corporate travel, awesome corporate conferences.
Free lunch.
Awesome VIP parties. Like these things are cool. So, it has its pros and cons. And I think that the world is changing and shifting. I'm actually surprised how much the UK has changed, especially the media in the UK, while I've been over here for the last couple of weeks. The way that the news is portrayed on the TV has changed. The attitudes in general around and about have changed. This type of stuff, the small talk that you might overhear, that type of thing has changed. And I think most of it is for the better, honestly. So I think that the company cultures have changed quite significantly as well. And I think that, some of these older companies like MasterCard, even IBM, got recently accused of like age discrimination for firing like 100,000 older employees and bringing in lots of young new graduates. But in some respects, that shows it's an old company. It's 109 years old, I think, IBM. And they're trying to stick with the times, keep young. But I don't agree with the way that they did it. That was a bit of a stupid move in the way that they did it. But it's natural that industries are going to change. Dress codes have changed at work. Like I was in the car today at 4 o'clock and the roads were packed. And I was like, it's 4 o'clock. Shouldn't people be working till 6? In Korea, normally people are working till 7. 8, 9, like it's a badge of honor to stay until 10 when the lights are on at 11 o'clock. You must be ghosting in so hard. But in reality, in York, like in much of England, people, it's like 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. They're just like, right, we're hitting the pub, lads. Like, we're off. So it's quite an interesting thing to see the difference. Anyway, this is a stretch from crypto. Let's get back on.
Anyways, And when Josh says go sanging so hard, he's actually speaking a little Korean. Go sang means work hard. So go sanging is like work hard for the cause.
Yeah. Sugo mani hashasayo means like, oh, you must have really put in some good effort today. And go sang mani hashasayo means like you really suffered a lot today. Did you suffer for the team? And suffering is an eternal thing that you've got to constantly do and show how hard you worked in South Korea. Because working hard, irrespective of if it was logical or smart or not, is a good thing in South Korea.
Yeah, I know all about suffering. I suffered quite a bit listening to that Pomp and Peter Schiff debate. So let's move on to some brighter topics. Let's do a little BCH news. CryptoFile.com launches a dedicated exchange for SLP tokens and BCH. So it's actually only one trading pair right now. It's the SPICE token and BCH. But I heard this. I saw this news a little while ago about these SLP tokens that you can just create on top of the BCH blockchain. It's super easy. You could teach your kid to do it, and you can do whatever kind of tokenomics you want. But I wasn't really sure like what kind of use cases it would have, or how it would monetize, or what kind of companies would be into doing it. And I think the SPICE token, it has decent volume, and I think their main use case right now is just like micro tipping on Telegram or on other social media. But I thought that was kind of interesting thing happening in the BCH space.
Yeah, I also think the interesting thing happening in the BCH space is the new Bitcoin.com exchange. So never mind this Small Fry's new exchange for SLPs. Let's talk about the actual exchange, the Bitcoin.com exchange, which is coming, which is going to have Bitcoin Cash as a base pair for many more cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, actually,
we're only about 2 or 3 weeks away from it. I think it's 23 days, 24 days.
Yeah, it's dropping pretty soon. Yeah, there's actually already an exchange that has BCH pairs. The name is escaping me right now. But yeah, that's going to be I've been thinking about that for, almost – not since the split, but I've been thinking about having a BCH trading pair for at least a year. Like, because one thing is, it's definitely going to increase the value of BCH because, for a lot of other things that you want to buy, anything besides Bitcoin or Ethereum, you need to buy Bitcoin and Ethereum in order to buy those other things you're looking at buying. So it's definitely going to help BCH. It's really going to help any project. So I'm really interested and see what kind of volume it does and to see if it changes, it helps the price of Bitcoin Cash or if it stabilizes it or helps it move up a little bit. What do you think?
I think it's definitely going to help the price in terms of Bitcoin Cash. I think it's awesome that you can go on exchange, buy it immediately without having to transfer from another currency like Bitcoin or Ethereum first. I actually think that the moves that Bitcoin.com are doing in the last few months have been really good. They did a website redesign. The new site looks much better. Roger Ver and his team are putting out much better content on social media these days. And also, this new exchange is built by some very smart people. I mean, I know a couple of the guys working at blockchain.com, and blockchain.com just opened their own exchange called The Pit. And that is like super fast, very low latency exchange. And actually Roger Ver promoted that because he's got some type of ownership in blockchain.com. And then I was actually surprised that only a short couple of days or maybe a couple of weeks later, he said, and now Bitcoin.com is having its own exchange. So I wouldn't be surprised if some of the, super fast trading features that are available on The Pit, which is blockchain.com's new exchange, are available on Bitcoin.com and that's that new exchange. And also, this is where I think the value of domain names is really going to come in, because when people are searching for newbies, when newbies are searching for what is Bitcoin, what is blockchain, having a bitcoin.com URL and having a blockchain.com URL is massive. It will make a huge difference. I remember a couple of years ago, I think it was even a year ago, I bought like one night 15, 20 random crypto domains, but they were not .coms. They were like .one, .net, .pro. And honestly, I've come back around to thinking that .coms still dominate the mind space. Mm-hmm. I think .ios are okay in crypto, but it's still very niche. So when it comes to the masses, .io still looks weird for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that Bitcoin.com has got a really good strategic advantage. And I'm thinking that Bitcoin Cash is going to blow up in the next couple of weeks after this exchange.
Yeah, definitely. Launches. Yeah, I've got a couple domain names myself. Maybe I'll shill them on a future episode.
I'm going to sell one. It's going to expire soon. So if anyone wants to buy it, contact me. It's called CryptoConsultancy.net. CryptoConsultancy.net. I decided not to use it. I decided to use BlockMavens.io. And I also own the .com for BlockMavens. So I like the name BlockMavens. Yeah. It makes sense. But cryptoconsultancy.net is for sale. Send me a message or write something via DM or something on Twitter and we can talk about that.
Okay. All right. Let's move on. All right. One more thing in the BCH space. There was a little article on Bitcoin.com, which we just mentioned, explaining how to use Cash Shuffle. And they're actually upgrading it to something called Cash Fusion, or it looks like they're going to upgrade it. So now there's a standard number of inputs and outputs, and you kind of shuffle in a pool that has a similar amount that you want to shuffle. If you want to shuffle a tenth of a BCH, half a BCH, one BCH, and the new one is Cash Fusion, because some people think even with the shuffling, you might be able to trace it. This is going to make it even harder to trace. So this new method is going to allow an arbitrary number of inputs and outputs of non-standard amounts, which essentially offers private coordination and zero knowledge of linkage between cash shuffle participants. So I think that's huge.
I also agree. I agree. I think the moves that the team at Bitcoin Cash ABC, I think that's the way we should refer to them, really good, very good for the market in the long term. I actually think one of the use cases of crypto, like we said at the start of the show, is, you wouldn't use Bitcoin for that. It's a public network, so that'd be pretty dumb. But a use case is illegal activity. I mean, let's not beat around the bush. Having a shuffler, what else could it be for, really, apart from if you wanted to make your transactions between like your friend super private? It doesn't seem to make much sense. Being able to shuffle to remove the trail or eliminate any trail is bringing privacy to Bitcoin Cash. And if Bitcoin Cash keeps on growing in popularity, and this is something you can do easily because their focus is on easy user experience, easy user interface, customer-centric stuff. And if this becomes easy, I mean, I think we're going to see a big rise in adoption of Bitcoin Cash. I can only see that happening in the next few years.
Yeah, definitely. I go to the Bitcoin Cash meetup in Boston sometimes, and actually there's not a Bitcoin Cash meetup in Providence, so I've been thinking about holding up the torch and hosting it myself, so we'll see if that happens. But even with all the exciting things happening with Bitcoin Cash or Bitcoin Satoshi Vision, it's still small in comparison to Bitcoin. And I saw this article on Crypto Slate that kind of compares the metrics of BCH and BSV compared to Bitcoin. And it's pretty eye-opening when you look at the volume, when you look at the hash rate, when you look at the fees. So for example, BSV and BCH's total fees have remained below about $1,000 a day for most of 2019. On the other hand, Bitcoin's daily fees often go beyond $1 million. So you could look at it another way too. You could look at, wow, the fees are so low. If you're sending it back and forth to people, that's a good use for peer-to-peer currency, but you're not going to be really incentivized to mine it versus with Bitcoin.
you know, you're mining it, there's $1 million in fees on top of the block rewards. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And the fees haven't been horrendous these days with Bitcoin. It's usually like $1 to $3. It's not the massive $20, $30, $40, $50 we're paying during that one time when fees were kind of out of control. Do you have any thoughts on that?
On this one, not too many thoughts, apart from, you know, that's the biggest downside of Bitcoin is the fees being fairly high. And it will be, I think, a barrier in terms of its adoption when actually, like, if it's more expensive than the worst current option, which is Western Union, then people are going to think, well, it's a bit complicated. Why not just use the traditional stuff? So I think that the focus on lowering the fees that Bitcoin Cash and SB have had is smart on their behalf. So that's all I've got to say on that story.
Yeah. Well, there's one other thing I saw from the story that was pretty interesting. And it could be good or bad, depending on your take. As of July 1st, over 94% of BSV transaction volume was being used by Weather SV, a weather app that stores its data on the BSV ledger. So I think that's really good for storing data, but it's kind of, you could maybe say this isn't really spoofing volume, but the volume is deceptive. It's not being used to exchange monetary value. It's just being used to store data. So that's kind of a little interesting, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting, actually. The hash rate is so much stronger on Bitcoin versus the others as well. So yeah, let's go to the next story, Kate.
Yeah, all right. Let's hop to where actually you are right now in the UK. So the UK is quietly preparing to chase unpaid crypto taxes. So they've been requesting data, identity data from a bunch of exchanges. And it mentions that, this is kind of surprising, 30% of cryptocurrency users in the UK do not know that cryptocurrency to cryptocurrency transactions are taxable events. I wouldn't be surprised. The number is probably similar in the US. And it also mentions that because of these taxes and these trades, maybe a lot of traders don't actually know that their tax liability is actually higher than their entire crypto holdings right now because of the way things have gone. So I guess you're more tuned into that than I am. Do you have any takes on that? Do you think there's a lot of crypto tax cheats in the UK, and do you think they can get away with it?
I don't think that there are, honestly, because all of the people that I've spoken with while I've been at home, I'm the only person who actually uses blockchain at all. Like, most people have heard about it, but they're not really using it or interested in it. Also, the UK, I wonder how they're going to define this law, because unlike in the United States, where Uncle Sam follows you around the world, no matter what happens, you still have to give your piece of the action to Uncle Sam. The laws in terms of taxation from income for non-residents, even if you're a British citizen but not a resident or an expat somewhere else, you're not going to be paying taxes to Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs if you're living abroad. So I've been living in South Korea for 8 years and living in Thailand before that for two. So I've been out of the country for 10 years. I don't know if they could look at some exchange that's randomly registered in the UK, and if I've ever done a trade on there, and then say, look, you owe us money because you traded on this exchange at X date. And then when you think about it, even if that was true and you did trade on that specific exchange that was registered in the UK, it's strange that they would consider it a taxable asset, because things like gambling in the UK are completely tax-free, 100% tax-free on
really
gambling winnings. Yeah. So casinos, any winnings that you earn in a casino, any winnings that you win at the horses in the national lottery, you're not going to pay a penny in tax, unlike the United States.
Yeah, I had no idea. Yeah, you definitely, that's a bummer in the US. Even if you win big, you have to pay taxes. You win that $100 million Powerball, you're paying like $35 million in taxes.
Well, actually, look, I'm a poker player. So in the World Series of Poker, Americans get absolutely rinsed when they win. But Americans that have moved to London to play online poker, they still have to pay taxes back to like Uncle Sam. But every other country in the world, if they moved to, like, they have a lot, there were a lot of Swedish people, a lot of Scandinavians moved to London to play online poker back in the day, like Isildur and stuff like that. And that's for tax reasons, because you have to pay tax. Like in Sweden, you have to pay tax on gambling winnings. So anyway, that's that side. I'm pretty surprised that this story, also when you read into the story, it's more like a scare story than reality, I think, because it's £135,000 they've invested into some software that is designed to try and track down these so-called tax evasion trades or something like that. £135,000 is absolutely nothing. That's probably one developer's salary for a year. And they've been developing this for 18 months. So it might be like a couple of junior guys in some back office somewhere. I really doubt that this is anything but just a headline grabber rather than something that the government's really actively looking at.
Yeah, nice. Let's talk a little bit about price action and bears turning into bulls and disbelievers turning into believers. So I saw this on Cointelegraph. Former Bitcoin bear, I believe he was a big bear, Joe Kernan, is now predicting that the coin could hit 55,000 by May 2020. And as far as, I don't watch CNBC much, but I know he's done some interviews with Pomp, and now he's become a believer. So it just seems like, before, they used to not know it, then they'd ignore you, then they laugh at you, and all of a sudden, there's more and more people getting on the Bitcoin crypto chain, train, and chain, and blockchain.
Yeah, they're getting on chain, on the train. So, yeah, that's good news. CNBC Squawk Box is on UK TV, so is Bloomberg as well. So while I've been here, there's only a five-hour time difference between the UK and the United States. So actually, during the afternoons, while my kid's having a nap, I like go down and watch Squawk Box and I watch Bloomberg. And you see quite a lot of stuff about cryptocurrency, just even if it's on the scroller at the bottom or there's some of the little bullet point stories on the side, rather than the main points of the show, they're on there. I mean, it's getting more coverage than I initially thought.
How about on the UK media? Do you see a lot of stuff with crypto?
No, the UK media is still completely dominated by Brexit. And I think that the UK media still thinks it's 2016 or something like that, because they keep on going on about Brexit as if they can stop it. I mean, there are a lot of interests in the UK that definitely do not want Brexit to happen. They want the UK to stay in the European Union. And they haven't really woken up and smelt the coffee, so to speak, that we are leaving with or without a free trade deal with the European Union, because our MPs voted for that. We voted for Article 50 more than 2 years ago. Article 50 is just, well, they didn't really vote for it. They voted to invoke it. So once you invoke Article 50, that means that you are leaving 2 years later with or without a deal with the EU. So that's law now. That's the default position. The UK is leaving the European Union with or without a free trade deal with the European Union. So I don't really get all of this talk. It's on the radio constantly. It's on the news, but it's largely the BBC and it's largely Channel 4, which definitely has a pro-remain in the EU slant on its reporting. It's quite negative and pessimistic about the UK's chances once we've left the European Union. And I just watch it and laugh because I live in South Korea and I've seen that the Koreans have got a free trade agreement with the European Union that is absolutely massively comprehensive, that would be completely fine for us to have something very similar to that. It doesn't involve freedom of movement of people. It involves a very liberal, let's say, tourist visa. So Koreans can go to the EU for 6 months. And that's because Korean tourists go to the European Union and spend a shit ton of money as tourists. So, like, that's a smart move for the European Union. It's cool for Koreans to be able to go there visa-free and hassle-free. There's absolutely no reason why we can't have something similar to that or something similar to Canada. And that's what's dominated the news in the UK. I think that once we have left, I think it will take a couple of weeks for the UK media to figure out what to talk about, honestly. And then they can talk about Bitcoin or something else.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Bitcoin being a safe haven. And there is a good article on Cointelegraph, three reasons Bitcoin is turning into a global safe haven for investors. And I've actually, even if you don't follow crypto, this has been in the news a lot. Like, a lot of fiat currencies are devaluing themselves on purpose for trade advantages. And, you know, a lot of people are flocking to gold, cash, maybe government bonds, but it seems increasingly they're flocking to crypto, and that the Federal Broad Trade Weighted Dollar Index is really on the verge of breaking. And if that's on the verge of breaking, it's not going to bode well for other large currencies as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the example that is easy to kind of talk about right now is China. You know, China has been manipulating its own currency, debasing its currency for export reasons to get an advantage in terms of exports for years. So they've always been like doing the number on their own currency so that they could help with the export supply and stuff like that. So it's definitely true. I didn't know about the US thing that you just mentioned, but
yeah,
fiat currency is, you know, it's useful to a point where most people don't understand money, and it's useful that you can create financial instruments that, you know, are helping the majority of the world through capitalism to get richer. But I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with, you know, playing a bit of a trade game with your competitors, as long as you're not really hurting your own domestic market.
Yeah, the US-China thing is a whole separate issue. But the article also mentions that at least seven other fiat currencies are dropping in value. And the article says that the strengthening dollar is actually catalyzing a massive global deflationary wave. So we've been talking a lot about inflation on the show, and hyperinflation and redenomination. Do you think there's a lot of reasons to fear a deflationary wave? Because that's something you really don't hear a whole lot about. And for me, unless it's massive, I don't think it's a big issue.
I don't see it happening, honestly. So I'm not too worried. Did you see recently, actually it was this morning, Mark Cuban, in relation to our debate we had last week and the week before that with the POM shifting, gold, Bitcoin, he said, I see gold and Bitcoin as being the same thing. So a good store of value. He said they're both collectibles. The value is based off supply and demand. And the good news about Bitcoin is there's a finite supply that'll ever be created. So he has, you know, he shares our opinion, I guess. We have the same opinion as him, or he has come around. Maybe he listened to our show last week.
Yeah. And actually, there's another little nugget in this article that Bitcoin is increasingly non-correlated with traditional markets, which is what Pomp mentioned during that debate. And there's a chart here, and it shows that Bitcoin, Ethereum, BCH, Ethereum Classic pairs with the dollar have a negative correlation to the S&P 500. And although gold also does, it's much smaller. You know, gold was like negative 0.18, but Bitcoin's negative 0.40. So it's also not only a good investment, but it's also kind of like economic insurance. It's like a financial hedge against something really bad happening in the fiat space.
Yeah, man. So everyone out there listening, just have some. And don't worry about it too much. Just have it as something that could have a huge upside with, you know, very relatively low downside if it's a small amount in your portfolio that you're willing to do the whole gamble thing on, you know?
Yeah, and interest rates are already crazy low, but all these countries are dropping their interest rate. Thailand, 25 basis points. New Zealand, a 50 basis point cut. So yeah, it just seems like there's a little race to the bottom. And then, yeah, it just kind of goes on to say that Bitcoin can provide asymmetric returns, and crypto in general can provide asymmetric returns in a way that gold and a lot of these other assets simply can't.
Yeah, man, it's interesting stuff. So what you should do, Also, Cadius, all of these cool articles, link them in the show notes.
They will be in the show notes.
In the description, yeah. So people can just go down and have a click and have a read so they can form their own opinions after reading the full articles, you know?
All right. So here's a here's another interesting article. Do you have anything you want to talk about, or should I mention
it? Keep going, man.
All right. So this is from Bitcoin.com. The new Liberty Dollar founder subpoenaed in the billion-dollar Bitcoin lawsuit between Kleinman and Wright. So if you don't know, the Liberty Dollar was like a, I want to say 0.99% silver coin. And I think he got in some trouble with that. But he's been also into crypto for a long time. So he's one of these other people who's really into silver and gold, but also into crypto. And apparently, Kleinman's side thinks that he has some inside knowledge into who is Satoshi or who owns all these Bitcoins that are locked up in all these addresses. And it'll be really interesting to see if he actually gets subpoenaed and he's forced to testify in this case that also might have some clues into the whole who is Satoshi drama.
I think, is this something to do with the Tulip Fund that he's going to get access to in January?
Yeah.
Greg Wright is going to have access to, like, I think it's 30,000 Bitcoin, and then this is saying so it's 27,000 Bitcoin, and the value is over $5 billion.
Yeah, $5 billion, yep.
You know, if Greg Wright actually is Satoshi, which, you know, I think it's becoming... as each day passes, less likely that that's the case because he's doing things that are quite erratic. But maybe we have to just wait and see because in January of next year, that's when apparently these assets are legally his. And then maybe he goes on a massive BTC dump and buys up all of the BSV on the market and you just never know. Like, it's impossible to tell. But I think that, you know, there's a non-zero chance that that happens. You know, like, there might be one in 10,000 chance of that happening, but there is a chance. So could be very interesting to see. Now, the more that I read about Greg Wright, the more that I'm thinking that, you know, there's something not quite right there. But I always like to give people the benefit of the doubt, and instead of letting other people do my thinking for me by someone else telling me that this person's bad, this person's good, blah blah blah, I actually like to go and read their own writings that they've written themselves. So if you go to Craig Wright's blog, you can read any of the stuff that he puts out, and actually the more that you read from his own, well, from his keyboard, I guess it's not by hand, but from his fingertips, from his brain to his fingertips to the blog, some of his stuff is fairly interesting and it starts to shake up the narrative a little bit. And I find that is true for all of the people that are famously hated on by the media. It's very straightforward. If the media tells you that, even if it's crypto media, which is relatively non-mainstream still, if the narrative on most people's mind is X, then I always think it's prudent just to do your own research a little bit, read some of their own writing from their own perspective, watch some unedited interviews that they've done, so like start to finish interviews that are over 30 minutes with the people. And then you can kind of think, wow, the way that they are portrayed is often not really as you would imagine, because when you read what they've written and you hear from their own perspective without it being chopped up and, you know, put into a sound bite, then often these people are not as crazy as you'd imagine. So I'd recommend people doing that with Craig Wright. The same for the President of the United States, actually. You know, listen to some of his interviews from start to finish unedited. And he's not as crazy as the media makes out. And that's the same for a lot of the hated politicians and hated public figures around the world. So I'm just going to say, let's watch this space by January.
Yeah, definitely. All right. I got one more article for you today. This is also from Bitcoin.com. Booze in Bitcoin mining, while violent, prohibition is always harmful. And it just goes through history about all the times prohibition has failed horribly. Of course, most people know in the U.S. For a while, alcohol was banned, or drugs, even drugs like marijuana have been banned. And now it looks like they're trying to, or they are banning crypto in certain jurisdictions, or they're banning mining in certain jurisdictions. We briefly touched on this before with Iran, and now apparently they're mining in Iran, but it has to be a government sanctioned. And if you're illegally mining, you could be punished by death. You know, so they just caught someone smuggling in 117 crypto miners, and that people are doing this because it's a way to escape these U.S. sanctions, because they're kind of in a fiat pressure cooker right now with what the power the U.S. has. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
And yeah, I mean, the prohibition era of the United States, there have been a lot of, you know, dramas and movies made about that time period. It became a period where, you know, criminals actually did take over the infrastructure of society. That's when you had, like, the mafia bosses running the show. You'd have lots of moonshine bars and people making their own stuff at home, which may or may not have been good for them. Made many people like lose their senses, go blind, etc., because it wasn't properly, properly done by people that knew what they were doing, and they had to keep it secret so they couldn't get help if they'd made a mistake and things of that nature. So what happens when you have a prohibition on anything is always the opposite effect, really. If people like doing something and it's in human nature to enjoy it, then just the government putting a ban on it isn't really going to work. It's just going to drive things underground. And in many cases, things get worse. So if you look at the drug war, like you mentioned, in the United States, that caused untold harm to families across the United States. It cost taxpayers a lot of money to incarcerate people on, you know, three strikes and you're out laws, which really don't make any sense for something like hemp, marijuana, that has been used for hundreds of years for many purposes. So it's pretty bizarre. But I think that the changes have recently been quite positive, with Canada accepting marijuana across the entire country, and then lots of United States states have adopted it and made it legal, and also that's good for revenues of the state, and it's good for consumers, it's good for everyone concerned. It decriminalizes stuff that shouldn't be criminal anyway, and the same can be said for many other things.
Yeah. So
there's a really interesting book, before I end the point, and it's called Defending the Undefensible. And I don't like the title of that, because it should be Indefensible. In English, we'd say it's the Indefensible. But I think it's by Walter Block. I might be wrong about the author. I think it's Walter Block. It's one of the guys who support the Mises Institute. And Defending the Undefensible is all about this type of stuff, where you just like make stuff illegal. All that happens is it doesn't go away. It just gets worse for the people involved in it. Like, if you talk about drugs, talk about, I don't know, prostitution, anything of that nature, and cryptocurrency as well. Yeah, it's by Walter Block, and he was written in 1976. And it's a really good book. I can recommend that. And I think you can get it on the Mises.org library for free, which is cool. So I'd recommend reading that. And there's also a couple of speeches that he's made about it. So if you don't want to read it, just listen to the speech and you get the good meat of the content, really.
Yeah. Well, this is something you probably don't know is illegal. And I didn't actually know this either until I read the article. In the U.S., it is illegal to save one's own private solar power without first striking a deal with a local government embedded power company. And I find that kind of crazy, because I do know there's a couple of crypto projects that are actually trying to solve this problem of people who have renewable energy and trading it through the blockchain using microtransactions and microcredits and being able to track it all through the blockchain. But it's hard to come up with these solutions when you've got the government roadblocks in the way.
Yeah, actually, one of the ICOs I did in 2017 that pumped pretty hard and made a good return was WePower. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
It's basically the same idea where, you know, you can, if you can harness the energy of your own environment and then you can turn it into a tokenized asset and trade it, it could be more efficient. So I think I'm pretty surprised by that law that you mentioned.
Yeah.
But some laws are just balmy and out of date. Like if you look in the UK, I live in an old Roman city called York. It used to be a Viking city called Jorvik. And when the Romans were here, they built a big wall around the city. And like they used to put people's heads on spikes at the gates and stuff like that. And actually, there's still a bylaw, which is obviously not going to be defended in any court, but it does exist. And the local bylaw says that you can shoot a Scotsman from the bar walls if they are wearing a kilt, with as long as you shoot them with a bow and arrow. So if you've got a bow and arrow and you're on the bar walls, which is the Roman walls that surround the city, and you see a Scotsman in a kilt and you shoot him with a crossbow, perfectly legal.
Yeah, so, but I think murder is still illegal, so there'll be a little conflict with those laws there. That's an interesting little tidbit. The thing with making the storing electricity illegal is kind of ridiculous. For one, it's kind of hard to store electricity unless you got like a bunch of Elon Musk's power walls or batteries or some other thing. But another solution, if it's illegal to store that excess electricity, is to run some miners with that excess electricity. You know, that's a good workaround to use that electricity instead of letting it just go to waste.
In a couple of weeks, let's get on that big mining guy and have.
Are you talking about me or someone else?
Talking about someone else.
Okay.
He's been running a mining network for quite some time. And he could be a really good guest. So actually, today I thought of two good guests we're going to get on next. The mining guy and the Venezuelan guy.
Yeah, I have a Venezuelan guy that we could talk to too. But yeah, I'm just a crypto miner small fry. So I'm really interested to talk to the crypto guy. That'll be an interesting interview.
All right, man. Well, and he seems quite up for it. So
yeah,
let's try and schedule that in the next couple of weeks as well.
All right. One other thing from Iran is, they're setting up a legal structure for crypto mining, and they're working on their own gold-backed crypto token. So we'll see how that goes. I know maybe the U.S. and a lot of places aren't happy with gold-backed fiat currencies, so a gold-backed crypto token could also make them unpopular with other countries around the world, because if it's truly a legit gold-backed cryptocurrency, it's going to be really high in value and be really well sought after.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely. I don't know if I mentioned this on air or not, but it was about the Islamic banking certificate that I've been looking into doing.
Yeah, we talked about that in a previous episode a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I think that it's going to become a place where they're going to harness solar energy, because it's abundant there, to run mining rigs to power cryptocurrency networks. And if they've got like a backing of gold as well thrown in there for just for fun, I think it's like the ultimate kind of it's the ultimate dream of like a villain in a Bond movie or something like that. but also it could definitely happen as well. So not to say that it there's anything nefarious about the Middle East having its own, funds. That's completely fine.
Yeah. Well,
but
a lot of people,
a pretty funny picture to put in your mind.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people think that Gaddafi's gold currency that he had planned was a major reason for his downfall, because other countries knew that it would really shake up the system.
Yeah, you're right. I think that there's a lot to be said about that, but it's probably not a thing that we should go into too much because I quite like my liberty and freedom.
Definitely. All right. Another thing I noticed talking about this article is the IRS is sending warning letters to crypto holders in America and in effect corralling them into centralized government-regulated exchanges. I guess that's nothing new, but I think the article makes a good point. And I'll quote it here. Strange behavior from groups claiming crypto is made from thin air, has no value, and is used largely by terrorists. In this case, I think they're talking about the groups being the Iranian and U.S. government. But I think it's really funny and contradictory that the same group will say that it's made from thin air, has no value, but it's also being used by terrorists. So, Josh, I'm wondering if you could explain it to me. How can something have no value, be made from thin air, but also be used by terrorists? Wouldn't that be I don't get it.
Yeah, it doesn't really make any sense, does it, when you actually sit down and think about it? It either has value and people are using it, or it doesn't have any value and no one would want to use it. But it can't have no value and only be used by terrorists. Like, that, those two things cannot occur at the same time. So, yeah, it's pretty daft way of looking at things, I think.
Yeah, it's you can kill them with a bow and arrow, but murder's illegal. Yeah, square that circle.
Yeah, it's kind of like that one. It's a law that just, you know, wasn't updated, and I think a lot of people's thinking hasn't been updated, frankly, about it. And that is what, you know, going back to episode one, the Libra coin, I think that that's what's going to happen when Libra coin does drop and it's available on everybody who's got Facebook. If they could just like send a message to someone from the other side of the world, but then also send like some type of currency across the messenger service of Facebook, that's a game changer. I mean, that's going to be massive. And then people will go down the rabbit hole, find out, they will Google the world, they will Google the words, what is Bitcoin? And then down the rabbit hole they go until they find the Dark Side of the Hodl Moon podcast, Crypto Basics episode 2, and they read that. Oh, sorry, they listen to that. They read the articles on the site, and then they think, holy hell, it's all happening.
Yeah, I think that's a good spot to end the podcast. It's getting a little bit later here. I know it's quite late where you are. I think after the podcast here, I'm probably going to go outside, grill a steak, have a beer, watch the sunset, and then look up at the sky and look at the stars and look at the HODL moon.
Yeah, that's always good to look up at the moon and HODL, fellas.
All right. Until next time, guys, remember to HODL and cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you for joining us on Dark Side of the HODL Moon. If you haven't already subscribed, please do so. Also, be sure to join our Telegram group, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and follow us on BitChute and YouTube, where you can find all the episodes as well as highlights from previous episodes. You can also visit us at darksideofthehodlmoon.com.
HODL Moon!